and we'll be reading from John chapter 9, verses 1 through 7. And as the gospel is not just something that we look at, but we look through, we will remain standing to sing together hymn 383, Open Our Eyes, Lord. As the story that we read is about a man receiving sight, we'll ask that we receive a similar transformation. So would you please stand this morning to honor God's word? John 9, verses 1 through 7. As he went along, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Neither this man nor his parents sinned, said Jesus, but this happened so that the work of God might be displayed in his life. As long as it is day, we must do the work of him who sent me. Night is coming when no one can work. While I am in the world, I am the light of the world. Having said this, he spit on the ground, made some mud with the saliva, and put it on the man's eyes. Go, he told him, wash in the pool of Siloam. This word means sent. So the man went and washed and came home seeing. This is the word of the Lord.
When I wasn't the first time I recommitted my life to Christ, but one of the pivotal moments in my life, a time where I did recommit my life to Christ, I was right around the age of 22, and I just moved out to Southern California. And while I was out there, I started reading the Bible a lot more than at any other point in my life. And I came across this one verse that really stood out to me. It was John 14:21. And it begins by saying, it's Jesus speaking. He says, whoever has my commands and obeys them, he is the one who loves me. And it hit me kind of heavy because I just spent 8 years obeying nobody if I didn't have to. So I wasn't obeying God and I wasn't obeying my parents. Now, I knew this, but what I never did is think in my head, oh, I don't love my parents. I did love my parents. My parents loved me, and I would say I loved my parents. But yet, here it is. Clearly, in my life, there were years of disobedience. So there was this reality that hit me that, wow, I didn't love my parents well. And I wasn't loving God well during those years of rebellion. And so part of what happened in that period in my life was a reconciliation with my parents and especially with my father and a confession of, I'm so sorry. I didn't love you well. This verse, though, it didn't just help me in my relationship with my parents and with my Lord. It also helped me in parenting my own kids. I had a couple phrases that I used a lot with my two kids. And one of them was, why do I love you? And they had this pat answer that they had to give back to me. When I said, why do I love you? They had to say, because you just do. I wanted them to know that I don't love you based on anything you do. You couldn't stop me from loving you. The moment someone put you in my arms, I loved you. There was nothing you could do about it. So why do I love you? Because you just do. But then I had another question for him. I said, how do you show your love to me? And the answer that I was supposed to hear back was, obey. Obey. That I love you, I lay down my life for you, and you love me by obeying. That you can say you love me, but if you run off and disobey, that it's. I think you're just saying it at that point. So I decided to call my daughter yesterday at college and see if she still remembered. So I did. I called her yesterday. I woke her up from a nap. Felt bad. So she wakes up and she's got this kind of tired voice. And I said, oh, I'm so sorry. Okay. Oh, no problem. I just want to ask you a couple questions. Do you remember that phrase that used to say where I would say, why do I love you? And then you would say, because you just do. Oh, yes, I remember this. And I said, well, do you remember the other one? Because I didn't say this one quite as much. I said, do you remember the response to this question? How do you show your love to me? And before I could finish it, in this tired voice, she was like, obey. And I was so excited that she remembered it. And then I tried to apologize and get off the phone as quick as I could for waking her up. That verse has stuck with me. There's another part to that verse, too. It continues. It continues like this. Jesus is talking. He says, whoever has my commands and obeys them, he is the one who loves me. And it goes on to say, and I, too, will love him and show myself to him. Jesus shows himself to us as we love him, as we move forward in our lives in obedience to what he's calling us to do and to be. You may be asking, why are you talking so much about John 14, 21? We just read John 9. And the reason I'm talking so much about John 14, 21 is because I'm convinced that this verse is a perfect summary statement for the entire chapter, chapter 9 in the Gospel of John. That a good summary statement for chapter 9 is that Jesus reveals himself to those who love him, to those who obey him. Well, you could ask, where is that? Well, we see some of it, maybe the beginnings of it, in the first seven verses of chapter 9 that we just read. But we don't see all of it because chapter 9 is one big story with multiple scenes in this story. And what we read in the first seven verses is the first scene. And it's a great opening scene. So how does the story begin? What do we see in John 9? What does obedience look like? Well, in scene 1, in the first seven verses, Jesus is walking along with his disciples, and they see a man born blind. And the disciples ask a question based on a false narrative that was going around in that day. And the question is this: who sinned? Who sinned? Was it this man, the man born blind, or was it his parents? And in response, Jesus says, neither this man or his parents sinned, but this happened so that the glory of God might be revealed in his life. And then Jesus went on to say, as long as it's day, I must do the work of him who sent me. He said, I am the light of the world. And in these next couple verses, that metaphor is going to come alive. As Jesus moves towards the man, spits on the ground, makes mud, puts it on the man's eyes, and tells him to go to the pool of Siloam, which means sent. So he sends him to the pool of sent. This is right after, by the way, Jesus just said, I must do the work of the one who sent me. Sent is a big word in the Gospel of John. So the man goes to the pool of sent, washes the mud off, and he sees. Well, what's up with that word sent? Why is John highlighting this word sent? And where is Jesus sending people to when he sends them? I want to say in the Gospel of John, it's always the same. When Jesus sends people, he sends them out to witness, to testify to the truth of Jesus Christ. We catch this right in the first few verses of the Gospel of John. Back in chapter 1, in verse 4, Jesus introduces himself as or John describes him as, in him was life, and that life was the light of the world. And by verse 6 of chapter 1 in John, John says, there came a man who was sent from God. His name was John. That's John the Baptist. And in verse 7 we find out, he himself was not the light. He came as a witness to testify concerning that light, so that through him all men might believe. That John the Baptist, back in chapter 1, was sent, and he was sent as a witness to the light of the world. That when Jesus is sending people, and he will send them often throughout the Gospel of John, he is sending us to witness. In John 17, 18, and in John 20, 21, he puts together this concept of, just as the Father has sent me, so I send you. Jesus sends us. He sends this man born blind to the pool of scent. He is sending him to be a witness, to testify to the light of the world. If that's the case, then we're going to see this play out in the rest of John chapter 9. So does it play out? Does this man born blind become a witness? Is he sent to witness, to testify to the world that Jesus is the light of the world? Well, what happens in scene 2? Right after the 7 verses we just read there, we move into scene 2, and the neighbors find the man born blind. And they come up to him and they say, Is this the guy? Is this the guy that we've seen begging all these years? Is he the man born blind? And some say yes, and others say it can't be. It's just somebody who looks like him. And the man born blind starts raising his hand and saying, no, it's me. I'm the man. I'm the man that was born blind that you knew all these years was begging. And so they ask him, well, how is it that you now see? And you know, you can almost feel it coming through the passage. It's like he's not even sure. He just pauses, right, and starts telling them what he does know. You know that man named Jesus? He put mud on my eyes, and he told me to go to the pool of Siloam. I went and washed, and now I see. That's all he's got. The neighbors say, well, where is this man? Where is this man? Good question, right? Like, what happened? What did he do? Where is he? His answer, it's almost funny, right? I don't know. I have no idea. It's as if John's highlighting for us what the man doesn't know. Have you ever felt like you don't know enough to witness? Have you ever felt that you don't know enough to tell anybody about Jesus? I want to say that's not true. It's not true here in John 9, and it's not true in our own lives. Because we can always just pause and tell people what he's done in our lives. We heard those testimonies read today about where has Jesus led you as you followed. And we heard testimonies about people who were in prison, someone who's imprisoned by alcoholism. But God has set him free and is transforming his life. He doesn't have to know everything. He doesn't have to have all the answers in order to share, Jesus is freeing me. He is setting me free from the prisons that used to hold me captive. And the woman who decided not to have an abortion, but to give up her daughter for adoption, and how God's been with her every step of the way. This woman doesn't need to know everything to say, Jesus has guided every step of this journey from the moment I decided to not have an abortion. She doesn't need to know everything to say that. And we don't need to know everything. We don't need to know everything to invite our friends to church. We can just tell them, look, I go to church and I feel like God's really changed my life. And you got to meet this Pastor Travis. He tells the most outrageous, ridiculous stories. You got to hear them. Or maybe you invite someone to your small group and you say, look, I have this small group where I'm just learning what it means to really live and going through life together with friends. And they have great snacks. Would you like to come to small group? Or there's a Sunday school class where they're talking about marriage. You don't have to know everything to go up to your friends or anybody and say, I feel like God's really changing my marriage here at this class on marriage. Would you like to come? The man born blind. As soon as he goes to that pool of scent and receives his sight, begins to obey the call to go testify, witness to the truth. And it doesn't end here. There's another scene. In the next scene, it's a little harder. Because this time, the man born blind who can now see is called before the Pharisees, because the miracle, the sign, the healing, it happened on a Sabbath. So now the Pharisees want to talk to him. What happened on the Sabbath? Tell us what happened. And so he tells them, well, he put mud on my eyes. He sent me to the pool of Siloam. I went, I washed, and now I see. And then they say, they're divided. The Pharisees start arguing, well, he's a sinner because he did this on the Sabbath. And others are saying, how can he be a sinner? He has to come from God in order to do signs like this. And then they turn to the man born blind who now sees. They ask him, who do you say he is? And you can almost hear the gears turning. Poor guy, he still doesn't know much, right? He just knows what happened to him. He doesn't even know where Jesus is. And he says, all right, he's a prophet. He has to be a prophet, right? Only prophets do things like this. He knows his scriptures. It's the prophets that come from God that do signs like this. So he's a prophet. Well, the Pharisees, they don't like this testimony. They have to now undermine his testimony because they don't want him going around as someone who was blind, who now sees and is testifying that Jesus is from God. They do not want that. So they go about trying to undercut his testimony. Well, how do they do it? They say, let's really find out if he was ever blind to begin with. Go get his parents. So they bring in his parents. Now, we can feel for these parents, right? It's hard enough, I'm sure, having a son who was born blind. It must be hard to see him suffering, to see him out begging. It also must have been very hard to hear your whole life who sinned, the man born blind or the parents. Everybody's wondering how we sinned. And they're probably even wondering, how did we sin? Is this a result of our sin? What did we do? That's a tough spot, right? We can feel for them. Well, I think it's good to feel for them. But it's not good to copy them. Because they become the example of exactly what not to do when witnessing, when testifying to the truth. The Pharisees call them forward. They're standing in front of this jury, these Pharisees who can bring judgment down on them. And they already know that the Pharisees oppose them. In fact, anyone who believes that Jesus is the Christ, the Messiah, the chosen one, the King of Kings, he is going to be kicked out. This person will be kicked out of the synagogue. And that's a big deal. That's becoming an outcast. Their society, their culture was tied up in the synagogue. So here the parents are before the Pharisees, and the Pharisees ask them, "Is this your son? Is he the one who was born blind? And if so, how is it that he can now see?" And they answer, "We can tell you this is our son, and he was born blind. But how he can see," and they even add a little something, "and who did it, we have no idea." And then we're told, they said this because they were afraid. Isn't that what makes all of us get quiet about Jesus? Isn't it easy to get afraid and just not say anything? I have a question for you. Is it really possible that the parents had no idea how this happened to their son and who did it? They come out with the who. They almost sound guilty. Is this possible? I mean, can you imagine their first encounter with their son who's been blind for decades, born blind? They come up on him and he's seeing. Now, we're not told about this, but didn't it happen? So they see their son, who is now seeing. What's the first thing they might have asked? How did this happen? Who did it? I find it hard to believe that this man born blind who was running around telling everybody how it happened and who did it didn't tell his parents. But I suppose it's possible. But even if that is the case, that the parents really didn't know, we don't want to copy them. Because we never want to be motivated by fear. Right? We want to be motivated by faith. We don't want to back down in fear. We want to be courageous and move forward and do what's right in spite of things that look scary. We want all these fears to take us and turn us towards God and move forward faithfully. I met a man. Actually, I met him before. I talked to a man this Friday. He just called and wanted to sit down and talk. I had no idea what he wanted to talk about. He had no idea that I was preaching this Sunday or that he was going to become a part of the sermon. But I did get his permission to share this. I sat down with this man and he said, "You know, for a long time, I would share with people about Jesus if they came to me. If they came to me with questions, then I would talk to them. But recently, I began wondering if God might want me to do more." And he came to the conclusion that he should begin sharing with people, even people who haven't come to him asking questions like, "Who is Jesus?" And he said, "The first person I decided to share with was my older brother." His older brother is 90. And he said, "You know, it's hard to share." And this is family, by the way, right? There's all sorts of dynamics going on in family. There's all sorts of dynamics going on with younger brother, older brother. It was scary for him to share. But he thought, "God wants me to share." So he went to his brother and he said, "I want you to be in heaven with me. There's a few of us in the family who are going to be in heaven. But you need to have Jesus in your life if you're going to be in heaven. Would you like to have Jesus in your life?" And this 90-year-old man, for the first time, said, "Yes." And then this friend of mine who I'm talking to said, "Are you sure you understand? Because here's what I mean. Here's what's involved." And his brother said, "Yes." And so they prayed. And this man went on to tell me about some other men in his life who he's talking to. And then he said, "But I have a question that I wanted to ask you. It's one of the reasons that I asked to meet with you. He said, is God mad at me? I thought, what? Why would you ask that question? And he said, because for so long, I wasn't sharing with people. Is he mad at me for not sharing all those years, even though I've started now? And I said, well, if you feel like there's something you need to confess to the Lord, then by all means, do it. But from what I can tell, it doesn't seem to me that he's mad at you. It seems to me that you've made a big turn towards him in your life, and he's using you. And I told him, he's using you even right now in my life. Because I can't get away from this question of, have I backed down from sharing with people sometimes because I'm afraid? Because we're studying the book of John, and as I'm studying and preparing to talk about John, either at the Friday men's breakfast or here on Sunday, I keep getting hit with this. Witnessing, testifying to the truth of Jesus Christ with those who don't know is more prominent in the Gospel of John than it is in my life. And I don't want to back down because I'm afraid of offending someone anymore. I want to respectfully share the truth of Jesus Christ with people because Jesus has sent us to witness. I want to talk to that person who I see all the time in the grocery store, or the mechanic who's been working on my cars for years. Ring it up more, talk more with my neighbors or the waiter or waitress that I'm beginning to know. He's sending us. And he says, if we have his commands and obey them, then we love him. Do I love him? He's sending me. If we're wondering what it looks like to be a faithful witness, all we have to do is go to the next scene. In the very next scene, the man born blind is called again before the Pharisees. And when he's called before the Pharisees, this time they ask him, and it's a little harder, give glory to God, this man is a sinner. And he says, he's a sinner. Really? All I know is I was blind, and now I can see. And they say, tell us again how that happened. And he said, you're not listening. Why do you want me to tell you again? Do you want to become his disciples? Everybody laughs when you say that line. I do too. It's a little dig in there, it sounds like, right? They say, who are you? Who are you? We're not disciples of this man. Maybe you are. We're disciples of Moses. As for this man, we don't even know where he comes from. And then the man born blind says, that's remarkable. You don't know where he comes from? He opened my eyes. I was born blind. No one's ever heard of this. He must come from God. It is remarkable that you don't know where he comes from. And they say, don't lecture us. You're out. You've been steeped in sin since birth. You're the sinner. And he sends them out. Okay. We've now moved through almost all of John 9, and we've seen obedience. But we said at the beginning, Jesus reveals himself to those who obey him. Where's the revelation coming? Well, I think we get it in the next scene. In scene 6, the last scene, I wasn't really counting them, but I counted 6. Jesus finds the man. And he approaches the man and he says, do you believe in the Son of Man? And the man born blind is still unclear and says, tell me who he is so that I can believe. And Jesus says to the man born blind, you have now seen him. He's the one talking to you. And the man born blind, who now sees, falls down and worships. Have you ever wondered why the man born blind responds with worship? I mean, that's a powerful response. Why does he respond with worship? I want to say it's because he knows his scriptures. I want to say specifically, he must have heard of Daniel 7, verses 13 and 14. Chapter 7, verse 13, from the prophet of Daniel, Daniel has this vision. And in the vision, he sees the Son of Man. And this Son of Man approaches the Ancient of Days. That's God. This Son of Man approaches the Ancient of Days. He's given all authority and glory and sovereign power. And it says all the peoples and nations, they worship him. Wow. Like, this is evidence of the Trinity, right? One God. Three persons, Father, Son, Holy Spirit. The Son of Man is worthy of worship. Jesus reveals himself as the Son of Man. The man born blind hears this, believes, and knows from Daniel 7, I'm assuming, he knows the Son of Man is worthy of worship, and so he falls down and worships. At this point, this man born blind, he's ahead of the disciples. I haven't seen the disciples at this point worshiping Jesus yet. This man born blind has had Jesus revealed to him as the Son of Man because Jesus reveals himself to those who obey him. And to this man, he has revealed himself as the Son of Man. But the story doesn't end there. What else do we find out about the Son of Man from Daniel 7, verses 13 and 14? We read that he is given authority and sovereign power, because Jesus, being the Son of Man, is worthy of worship. But Jesus, being the Son of Man, also has authority to judge. And that's where John 9 ends. After this man born blind, who now sees Jesus and worships him, Jesus said, it is for judgment that I have come into the world, that the blind may see, and that those who see may become blind. That's interesting, right? It's not just judgment in the negative sense or just the positive sense. It's that Jesus, as the Son of Man, gives sight to the blind but makes those who can see blind. Didn't sound right. What does he mean? I think we get a clue from the Pharisees' response, because there's Pharisees gathered around at this point, and they hear Jesus say this, and so then they respond, what? Are we blind too? And Jesus said, if you were blind, you'd be innocent. But because you claim that you can see, your guilt, your sin remains. Interesting, right? We opened up with this question, who sinned? And everybody's guessing the man born blind or the parents. And the Pharisees is telling us Jesus is the sinner. The man born blind is the sinner. We get to the end of the story. Who's the judge? It's not the Pharisees. It's the Son of Man. And who's the sinner? It's not the man born blind. It's the Pharisees. Because Jesus gives sight to those who come to him confessing blindness. But Jesus allows blindness, sin, to remain on those who come to him saying they see just fine without him. If you're here today, and you have spent your life, or at least you feel like recently you've spent your life telling Jesus, you see just fine without him. I want to invite you to not stay in that place. That it's a dangerous place when we look at Jesus and all he's said and done for us, and that we tell him we see just fine without him. That I'd like to encourage you, even now, to receive, maybe for the very first time, to confess to Jesus, the light of the world, that you need him in order to see. To believe that Jesus is the Son of Man, and he is worthy of worship.